This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. I have two wonderful guests today. At the bottom of the hour, I have New York Times best-selling author Lisa Brennan Jobs. And she has written a book called Small Fry. Now, Lisa is, of course, Steve Jobs' daughter. And it is a really quite an amazing book. And I am really excited to talk to her. This is a story of her life as the eldest daughter of Steve Jobs. She had a very difficult childhood, not at all what most people would think. And she has written a compelling book, and the minute I started reading it, I knew that it was written by a very talented author, so I'm really looking forward to talking to her, and that'll be at the bottom of the hour. But right now, I'm turning to one of my favorite authors. I get such a kick out of this author for several reasons. One, because I love her name. Her name is Peg Herring. And then because she's from Michigan, and I, as everybody knows, I always love to talk to anybody from Michigan, especially from the Upper Peninsula. And so I'm so happy to welcome Peg Herring to talk about her new book, Pharmacon. Hi, Peg.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay. Well, it's great to talk to you again. You know, as I told you last time, my two favorite foods are trout and herring, and so I often think about you early in the morning when I take my coffee like a good Finlander, and my herring, I need that in the morning, and I get such a kick out of you. You know, when you were on last time and we were talking about kidnap.org, the first in your Kidnap Caper series, I told you that I laughed so hard. There were so many places where I laughed so hard that my jaw ached.
Oh, well, that's good, I guess.
Oh, it's wonderful. I love books that make me laugh out loud, and it's funny sometimes, or at least smile. I judge a book actually by the ability to do that. Even a thriller, you know, you can write. People can write thrillers, but there has to be that moment where it just gives you a kick and it puts a smile on your face. I was recently, I read Andrew Grant's book, Invisible, and it's a serious thriller with lots of, you know, action and things. But then he has these little twists where suddenly he'll say something, write something so cute, so so different that you just sit there and smile. And of course, with your books, you actually laugh out loud.
Well, good.
So how are you? How's everything in Michigan?
Well, it's funny that you should talk about laughing during a book, because my husband had very minor surgery yesterday, but I was sitting in the surgical waiting room laughing out loud at a book I was reading, and I thought, this is not appropriate for this situation, but it was a funny book. It's by a British author named Tom Holt, and I always get a charge out of his kind of fantastical, this one's about genies and the world ending and things like that.
Oh, yeah, that's sure to sure to make you laugh. Wow.
Yep.
Well, I, as I said, with the first book, kidnap.org, authors always work to write that first few pages. And when I read that first few pages, it was like, okay, we've all been there. We've all been there. And that's when Robin Parsons, your girl, is in the shower. And, one thing after, it's one of those days, you know, it's just, and that stuck with me. And then now with the new book, Pharmacon, we have to tell everybody why it's called Kidnap Capers, and the whole.
Well, okay. The background is the kind of what if idea is, what if a group of ordinary people took on the big cheaters of our society head to head?
Yes.
So in the first book, Robin gets to a point where she can't stand the bad guys getting away with what they get away with anymore, and so she starts this group. And in the second book, Pharmacon, they're pretty well organized. They know what they want to do, and they go after a huge pharmaceuticals manufacturer headed by a very nasty man.
Yes. Now, you know, we say this is fiction, and it is just one of those things that you dream about. But I will say, in Pharmacon, it starts off, I will say, with a lawyer.
Yeah.
Now, I have had some experience with lawyers over the years, and I found this section so endearing, so beautiful, that I read it twice because I said, I have actually dreamt about writing a movie similar to that over and over, where I take all the lawyers who have done bad things and
I know.
Oh, yes.
And you have no power. And that's, I think, what the appeal of these books is that the little person, or this, in this case, a group of little people, you know, kind of takes that power away from these lawyers and business cheats and politicians and people who are just kind of saying, you can't stop me. And these people say, yes, we can. They don't always do it well, but they do.
And they get in sometimes a little trouble. But you left you left us last time at the end of kidnap.org, and where the ensemble group that you came up with had taken over a mansion and were renovating it. And I love, of course, everybody loves these renovation things. So I think we all got into that. Yeah, this is fun. This is great that they found this place and that they're going to make it their headquarters. So tell us about the group. Of course, everybody loves M. She's the octogenarian of the group. And just tell us about them.
Okay. We start with Robin, who we've already kind of mentioned, but she was a secretary for a lawyer's office. And she's kind of the glue that holds everything together. She's not real confident in herself, and so she struggles with, you know, am I doing this right? Am I going to get somebody arrested or killed or whatever? So she has that to deal with. But she often ends up counting on stuff that her father taught her, and he was a con man. So even though she hates him, he did teach her some good stuff. Then M, as you said, is an octogenarian who worked for the FBI. And so she has skills and she has a lot of knowledge, but she's got arthritis too, so that's kind of bad. Then they have Cam, who is somewhere on the autism spectrum. He's a great, big, beautiful guy, and he hasn't got a lot of self-confidence, but he's coming along. I like the way he's growing in this book. And his friend is Hua, who was brought to the States as by slavers and escaped the slavery and joined the group. And then the final member of the group in the first book was Tom Wyman, who was hired to hunt them down and get them arrested, but he ended up joining the group. So that's the five basic people. And then in this book, we're going to add a few and subtract one. So we'll just leave it at that.
Exactly. Let's leave it at that, because it's just a wonderful group. We always look for the dynamics between the characters,
yeah, right.
And you really developed that so nicely. I get such a kick out. I get such a kick out of your writing. You have, you're funny. You're sort of irreverent humor. That's what we can say.
That's a good word.
Is that a good word for you? Irreverent humor. She's got it all right. So it's wonderful writing.
Well, it's, you know, I was thinking about that this morning when I was considering this interview. You know, one of the things that you find as a when you start a series, is that you have to keep those characters in the, you know, the way you set them up originally, and they have to interact with each other, and they each should have strengths and weaknesses. You know, all of the great ensemble casts on television or movies or whatever, you know, everybody is a little bit crazy in one area, but very competent in others. So that's one of the things that I have to do, is keep them developing, but still themselves.
Well, talking about movies, there every once in a while I get a series or, you know, of books that I just I want so much to see on the screen. I used to write screenplays, so I see things very visually, and what I could make out of it, you know, I just like I get so frustrated because this series, of course, when you need another 10 books, you know, to sort of qualify for that type of thing, but that they could look at you and say, wow, she's developed these really interesting characters. They're a little bit, you know, they're not, we have all these ensemble characters, but sometimes you have ones that are unique. And in this case, I think you have a uniqueness of each of the characters, that it would translate so beautifully. It reminds me of I have another author that whose books I have the same thing. I'm reading the books. I know I'm reading the books mentally. I'm physically reading this book, but I'm like, I'm actually walking through the, you know, writing the script, doing the movie, and I want to see it on television.
And that would be great.
You know, we definitely need stuff like this, because it's really quite pathetic out there. They have no development of characters in the recent things. I'm like going crazy. There's so little to watch. So
yes, I know what you mean. You watch reruns of things you already knew.
Oh, I mean, how many times can you watch, you know... It's so funny. You feel so comfortable watching the reruns. I mean, I can watch the old Perry Masons over and over, because they had the wonderful characters. I mean, there's Della Street and there's Paul Drake, and you know them, and they're fun. And it's the same, you know, with you. And the other author I'm thinking of is Carol J. Perry, who writes Witch City Mysteries. And again, she has this same dynamic, that her characters are different from other characters, but she has a nice flow. And so that's why I'm waiting for you to, you know, hit that sort of mark where they maybe might start paying attention to you, that because they want, you know, they want a certain number of things. But with PharmaCon, I think you're in your stride. That's all I can say.
Well, that's good. My editor says that the next one, she has to deal with her father, which I think is a great place for that to happen after two books. So I just have to figure it out.
You have to figure it out. And, oh, I don't know, you have a few other things going on in your life, too.
Just a few.
So tell us a little bit about what else you do. I understand that you like to travel. Are you doing any traveling?
Yeah, we haven't done much of that in the last year, but we sold our camper, and so we don't know what the next travel adventure is going to be. We said we'd go back to Alaska, so that might be it. But then we talked, too, about just out west. We love the mountains and the deserts and all the stuff that's quite different from Michigan, even though we always come back to Michigan.
And what's the temperature there today?
It's going to be nice. It's 70 something.
Oh,
already.
Wow. That's good. It's warm. My brother's up in Pelkey, and,
it hasn't been nice.
No, it's been a bit cool.
And wet.
And wet. That's the thing they always have to worry about, when it's too wet. But there is nothing like the Upper Peninsula. It is something so special. I always say to people, it's so special. They said, well, we should go there. I said, oh, well, that's all right. We don't really We don't really care.
We don't really want you there.
We don't really want you there, you know. We never were thrilled with that bridge, and you know, that's all right. You know, the ferry boats used to take people across, and that was enough people.
But, yes, I remember them lined up at the shoreline.
Yeah, so, you know, it's sort of a two-edged thing. You want people to see it, but then you don't actually want people.
Right. Well, my husband says that's why God created black flies and mosquitoes.
That's true, because, yes, all those foreigners, you know, from Ohio and all those strange states, they don't understand it. They don't bother us. I don't know. They never bothered me when I was a kid. They really didn't. We used to run along the shore there, you know, up in Misery Bay, the beautiful white shores all along there. I don't know. I never was bothered by them, so I guess... Maybe I didn't smell right or something for them. So they didn't like me. So tell us. So you're going to start the third of this series, right?
Yes, I'm working on another project right now, and it's almost done. So I think I can safely say that I'm going to start on the third of the kidnap books, but I also have Maggie Pill, you know, that's my alter ego, and she has a book just came out about the same time Pharmacon did, so there's always something more to do.
Well, and of course you have one of these writer's minds that can juggle these. It's like David Baldacci. He's working on, you know, three different characters all the time, you know, and he has to...
No, I kind of can't do that, but what I can do is I can do an edit and then leave one book and go to another book. I can't stop in the middle of one to work on another one. I should be able to. I was a school teacher, and you're always juggling 20 things at once, but that one doesn't work for me.
So, you know, when you mentioned a camper, so when you had a camper, and where you traveled all across the country?
We did. We would just kind of, we're not really big planners. So we would just take off and see where it felt like we wanted to go. And then if there was a specific place we wanted to see, of course, we'd make plans for that. So we've done the Grand Canyon, and we've done Alaska, and we've done all the big national parks and places like that. And I think that's good for a writer to kind of get out of, you know, her home area and see what else is out there. And then we've also done some international traveling. We had a daughter who lived all over the world. So we've been to several places to visit her, which were places you would never go on your own, you know, like Dubai. Nobody I know has been to Dubai except John and I. So that was fun, too, just to see the world a little bit.
Well, it's always fun to see the world and have different adventures. You never know when they're useful, you know, in your writing, and that's one.
Exactly.
You know, I know that one of the things that you did is you visited Wales.
Yep.
I used to go to Wales quite often, and
really?
I lived in England for quite a few years. I had a cottage there. I was obsessed with Jane Austen, so when I was 21, I bought a cottage near where Jane Austen lived, you know, was born, and so.
Wonderful.
But then that gave me the opportunity to travel all over Great Britain and you know, go down to Wales quite often, and you're, mm-hmm. you know, it's a funny place, isn't it?
Yes, I love it. I was just telling someone the other day, I don't really know if I could only go back to one of the British Isles, which one I would choose, because when you're there, you think this is the best one, and then you go to the next one and you think, no, this is the best one. You know, I loved Scotland, I loved Ireland, loved Wales, and of course England is just, I'm a former English teacher, so England is pretty much history for me. I loved it.
Well, I know I do too, and I read a lot of British you know, cozy mysteries too, because also Welsh cozy mysteries. I have Kathy Ace. who was here at BoucherCon. Have you ever attended a BoucherCon?
I have, yes. Yeah. Several.
Several? Well, Kathy Ace was here, and she's from Wales, and she writes these books set in Wales, which is always is fun because they remind me of you know, the places that I visited.
Right.
So, yeah, it's great to get out there and see the world and then to get back to northern Michigan, the Upper Peninsula, and coffee and trout. Do you guys fish?
Maybe.
So yeah, it's just it's a very very special place, and I think that, you know, with PharmaCon, as I said, I think you're hitting your stride with this series. It's going to, I hope that it continues a long time. Oh, I wanted to mention the Audible version of kidnap.org is very, very good.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm sure I'll pass that along to Megan because she is, I think, really good. And she's also working on the second book right now.
So. Ah, okay, because I halfway through the Audible version, I didn't realize you had the Audible version. And so when I was, looking at the new book, I saw that, oh my goodness, I jumped when I said, that's the Audible version. I get to listen to it too. So, and it really, again, because you have, your writing is very, you know, it's very clear and very descriptive. And then when you're, some of the dialogue and everything, it just works so well. And I thought, wow, so people can, this book, of course, is a standalone, but anybody who reads this, I think they should go back and get kidnap.org. It's really, really funny, and it's a great introduction into how an author develops. I always like to see how an author develops a series. And to see, you know, even if I read, start a series like at number 14, I probably will go back and start at one because you see the development, and I think that's so, you know, much part of the fun of it. So anyway, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. Tell us, you have a website?
Yes. Okay. Pegherring.com.
That's easy. Pegherring.com. And people can read about more of your work and some of the other books that you've done. And they can also find the connection to your Facebook page. Everybody likes to do Facebook, I guess. And they can sign up and subscribe to your mailing list so that you can send them information. And if I had done that, then I would have known that you had an Audible version because, you know, I'm always, you know, so
it's
busy.
It's hard to keep up, though, isn't it?
It is, you know, and I get so many books all the time. Which is so much fun, but you know, but if I had been signed up to your newsletter, I would have known when the Audible version came out. So it's a wonderful thing to do, and it's a very nice. And I see that you have some nice green leaves there, and that's nice. So again, thank you so much for being on the program today, Peg.
I think you're
a fantastic author. And I have a great future here with this series.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, it was a joy to talk to you. Take care. And, I'll have you back to talk about some of your other books, too, later in the summer. Okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Cassie.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay. Great. She's fantastic. We're going to take a commercial break, and then I'll be back. And we're waiting to talk to Steve Jobs' daughter. Okay.
Is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I'm just waiting for a call from Lisa Brennan Jobs, and we're going to be talking about her fantastic book called Small Fry. Meanwhile, I wanted just to remind everybody that they can go to my webpage at radio-joyonpaper.com. I will be having, on Thursday, Bill Larson will be here, and he will be answering intellectual property questions. So if you have a question, send me an email, and I will be happy to put it to Bill, and he will give us some good advice. And so, as I said, it's really exciting that today I'm going to be talking to an author whose book I found so amazing. I was just enthralled by it, and I'm just... Sometimes you get a book that you say, it's wow. It has this wow factor. And I can see why she has gotten such great reviews, because this book has wow factor. It's funny, sometimes when you get a, you know, when I get a book, I read a lot. This is really one of those books that I couldn't put down. I started reading it, I was at my computer, and I started reading it, and I an hour later, I realized I'm still sitting in my computer chair reading a book, and I got up and I got to my comfy chair, and continued reading, because it is one of the it is so well done, and biographies sometimes by celebrities aren't all, you know, they're interesting, but they're not great writing, and in this case, I have a combination not just of a fascinating story, but a brilliant new writer. Hi.
Hi.
Lisa Brennan Jobs, I am so thrilled to talk to you about your book, Small Fry.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, Lisa, As I started reading, I was telling my audience, I started reading this, I was sitting at my computer desk, and I started reading, and then I couldn't stop reading. And an hour later, I realized, my goodness, I'm still sitting at my computer. Then I got up and got to my comfy chair and just continued reading, because this book is brilliant.
Thank you so much. Meanwhile, your audience, your radio audience, was waiting for you to talk to them. Reading and reading.
You know, it's so funny. You know, I get a lot of books and I get a lot of biographies, and quite a few from celebrities. But it's very rare that I get a book that not only is a biography, but it reads like a brilliant novel.
I think sometimes I sort of chuckle at the idea that people pick it up sometimes thinking that they're going to get a celebrity memoir, and then they find in the pages that they see maybe parts of themselves and their own life in there. And then that they think that they're going to get a book about a famous man, and then chuckle, chuckle, they actually get a book about a girl coming of age. So it really is, it's really a memoir. It's not really a... celebrity book.
Yeah, exactly. It's not. And sometimes, you know, that people will say, I don't want to read celebrity. Everybody should read this because this is, as you say, it's a memoir. It's a compelling story of a young girl. All the time I'm reading it, I started thinking, oh, I wish your father, Steve Jobs, had lived long enough to realize that he had a brilliant daughter who is really, I know that in the future you're going to write novels and you're going to write many more books because you have a talent.
Honestly, I think I'm more of a nonfiction writer. But I know what you mean. I think that there is a quality where when you're writing a memoir and you spend a lot of time with it, it sort of adheres to the rules of story. So it becomes a story, a real story. I mean, I think there's a reason that the rules of story, like beginnings and middles and ends, are so appealing to us. Maybe because ultimately they're true. But I do think with my father, yeah, of course I wish that he'd lived longer. I think... But he did, you know, he knew I was a writer, and he knew me pretty well, and so I do feel
that he knew you
a certain joy at getting to depict our relationship in some ways as very positive and interesting.
Well, you know, most people, you know, don't know your story. It is, as you said, a story of a young girl growing up in many ways, it was like you were always walking on eggshells, you know, trying to maneuver your way through what was started off as, you know, with a lot of problems with a father who didn't at first accept you.
Yeah, it's a strange situation, right? If looking back at your childhood and trying to make sense of what happened, and I do have... Definitely kind of extraordinary highs and lows, I think. I think it's not so different in a certain way than many people's childhoods, in a sense there's, you know, no one gets through it unscathed. It's always a big deal. But I think there were these extraordinary highs and lows. My parents were so young, and one of the things about going back and working on this book is I got to spend time with my young parents again. It had gone so quickly, and they were so alive and so young themselves. And so it's interesting going back as a woman who was older than they were at the time and getting to spend time and try to understand who they were and why they made the decisions that they made. But yeah, so my father wasn't around when I was little. I think he was incredibly, he was 24, and he found out he had a kid, and it wasn't intentional, and his answer was to kind of be intermittent. Go in and out, and my mother was also incredibly young, and we didn't have money, and then the process of the story is kind of, you know, coming to terms with all of this, and growing up.
Well, of course, you know, everybody knows that he was a genius, but we do know through this book too that he was so complex, and it's sometimes hard to. And you go up and down also in the book, you know, like sometimes you really, as a reader, you get really angry. You say, oh, you know, I'd like to just shake him and say, you know, look at this delightful child and how she's trying so hard to you know, do things right.
Yes, but I do think, and I think you'll agree with me, I was able to look at myself with all of the, from all the angles, like I was delightful, but I was also mischievous and devious and human. And it was only in kind of looking at my own humanity that I was able to do that with all of the different figures in my life, my father and my mother. But I know there's sometimes looking back and writing it that made me sad and made me upset. And I think there was a great catharsis in writing the book. Because when you look at someone from all the different angles and different perspectives, they come alive and they become more understandable. So even the points of weakness of both of my parents, where they just weren't the kind of parents one would hope, they were just incredibly human. And it was kind of reassuring to see them from all the sides, I think.
Well, as I said, your father was complex. At times he could be very, you know, trying to get very close to you and doing things, which I think one of the things that was great was that he gave you his name. I think
I had a lot of compassion when I went back. I had a lot of compassion for the fact, or a lot of respect, actually, for the fact that when I was a kid, he kind of ran the other way. And then at a certain point, clearly he'd made a decision that he wanted to be part of my life. And he wasn't very good with kids. He wasn't a natural. He was really awkward. And I think as a child, you wonder, am I doing something wrong? And then as an adult looking back, you realize, oh, he just didn't know how to be with children. Here's someone who is exceptionally good with adults and in business contexts and incredibly charismatic, but with a child, he was almost struck dumb and didn't know what to say. And so what I thought when I went back to write the book was, God, that took a lot of courage after not having shown up for so long to come back and really consistently try. So I don't mean to flatten what you're saying. There are some difficult times, difficult episodes with both of my parents. I didn't smooth it over. I kind of let everyone be human in all of the prickly angles. But I did have compassion looking back for the fact that he'd really tried later, considering his own weaknesses and difficulties.
Because he had a rough childhood.
Because he had had a certainly an interesting and different childhood, and also because he wasn't so good with children, he didn't really know what he was doing. And I don't know about you, but especially the older one gets. I'm 41 now, and it's very uncomfortable doing things I'm really bad at. I think it's one of the things that happens when you're an adult is you kind of stick with the things you're pretty good at. You don't take up hang gliding usually, or you don't take up roller skating because, you know, it's so new. And I think I admire him for doing something so new and difficult and trying to get to know me later. So it is a kind of process of childhood or parenthood in reverse, where we didn't know each other when I was younger, and then we sort of gingerly, slowly got to know each other as best as we could later before the inevitable departure that is growing up. Children leave.
Well,
and that's sad as well.
There were very touching things, like when he did find you in Japan, which was rather unexpected when you were on a school trip, and he shows up.
I mean, it was really, incredible. There were these incredible moments, I think, with the two of us. And I think that part of, you know, he came, so I was with my class. I went to this wonderful school at the time, and we had learned Japanese, and then we were going to Japan. This is not a memoir of suffering. I think this is a memoir of being a child and growing up. But there were lots of bright, wonderful moments, and I was in Japan with my class, and he showed up as a surprise. And there was this kind of feeling of exceptional wonderment near him that when he did show up or when he was present, it was really exquisite. And so I was always searching for that.
Now, of course, your mother was is a talented artist, and your relationship with her had its ups and downs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a parent now, as of a year and a few months,
Oh, that's
ago.
Great. Okay.
And I have to say, I did it a little bit later, significantly later than my mother, and with more resources and a father in the picture. A partner, I have so much compassion. I certainly always had compassion, even as a child, for what she was going through. But now, having had a child, the idea that anyone does this alone and poor is shocking and amazing and incredible. And I wouldn't wish my mother's circumstance was quite difficult. So she was human as well. And it was a delight to try to let everyone be human and yet let everyone be lovable at the same time. I think there is this thought that people have, that I have too, that if we can be perfect or if we can be right or if we can be always good or something, then we're lovable. But the truth is that's not, if we interrogate our own experience, it's not that the easiest or the most perfect people are the most lovable. In fact, I think there's something incredible about loving someone who's human. I read This Boy's Life, which is another memoir that I truly love, and it's by Tobias Wolff, and it was kind of liberating, actually, reading it while I was writing this book, because I realized that the more devious and mischievous the young character was, young Toby was, the more I loved him. And it kind of set me free when I was writing this book to inhabit who I was fully, to be a real kid with lots of conflicting impulses and, you know, bragging about my father when I wasn't supposed to mention him and doing whatever I could to survive and thrive, just like everyone else in the story is.
And I think you're right. Your mother was really incredible because she did try so hard, and it's not easy to be a single mom.
I think it's incredibly difficult. I can hardly imagine doing it. And I think people who are single mothers need incredible amounts of support. And you can see in the story how she's really working so hard to make things okay for us, and working hard, you know, with her intellect and with her hands, and trying to create a story that we would want to live in. But I also think that she was creating a myth at the same time as we were living, a myth that didn't leave us lost and losers, a myth that meant that we were going to be okay. And I think that I was kind of resentful of her myth, and then also I'm very grateful for it because it turned out to be true. So she would say, anyway, but the other thing I think is that people see in this story what resonates in particular with them, I've noticed. You know, someone who is a single mother might see that particular part of the story as being really meaningful, and someone who is a father to girls might see the relationship between me and my father as particularly meaningful.
Well, that's why I think this book is really so lovely. As a read, it's just a great read, and because you are such an observant person, such a compelling writer, the book Small Fry is just an enjoyable read. But you're right; it has a deeper touch that you feel. You first of all, if your life wasn't quite the same, you do see the difference, and you can appreciate what you have in life. And it's not always money.
I think it's a compelling and sort of somewhat universal story.
Exactly.
Even if it would seem to be so particular, I guess if you kind of tap into humanity, you get something at the root which is very common.
And you've done a beautiful job. I want to thank you, you know, so much for being on the program today. This is one of the books that I know that I will be talking about to my listeners, not just today, but other times when they ask me, you know, what book should I read? What book should will I gain something from? Sometimes people will say, well, I want a book that will give me something, you know, give me some answers. I think this book does.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Yes, I hope it brings people laughter and pleasure and meaning and something profound.
Well, I think it does. Exactly. And joy. Yeah, I did. When I finished it, I did see that you found joy in a lot of things, in a lot of ways. And I think you've done a great service in writing this book. And it's by Lisa Brennan Jobs, and it's called Small Fry. Of course, it's a New York Times bestseller, and all of the reviews and everything that people say about you, about your being sensitive and talented, are so true. And it's really been
Thank
an
you.
Honor and a joy for me to talk to you today, Lisa.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Bye.
Wow. Okay. One thing, if you have, I don't know how to say this, if you have a father who was there for you and you really, really will appreciate him even more. It was just Father's Day. And this is a Steve Jobs was a complex person, and in many ways I as I told her, I went up and down. There were times that I really got angry just reading about the way he treated her. I think she's done a very brave thing. She's come through it all, well-rounded, and as she said, it was cathartic. She discovered a lot about herself and can look back. But in a way, on the other hand, there are sort of no excuses for really, really being, inconsiderate. And it doesn't matter if you're a genius or if whoever you are. It is so important to think about what you say, because he said some really harmful and just mean things. I don't like when people say really mean things, and so I was really thrilled that, you know, I read the book and she got through it, and she went to Harvard and she's a great writer now, and of course, and you have to remember that at points in her life, in her childhood, he would give them no money whatsoever. And her mother was struggling as a single mom working two jobs. And when you look back at that part of her life, the early part, you are amazed that she came through it so well. And that eventually, as I guess, you know, he matured at 40. He finally, like, got the idea that he wanted to be a part of her life. And so, you know, and things happened and things were better for her. But that's why it's a fascinating story. There's a real insight here into the entire 70s and 80s years in California, in Silicon Valley. She has a lot of insights into what life was like there. That's why I read the book, I was like thinking of that song, flying on a jet plane, you know, to California, because she does bring it to life. She's very observant. I was so impressed with her writing, whether it's flowers or whatever she's writing about. She just is very one of these writers who really notice things and is able to write about them and have a real sense of place when you're reading this book. You really feel the sort of California world that she's living in. So it's called Small Fry. She has a website, and her name is Lisa Brennan Jobs. And that came, you know, he added that name, Jobs. Really, she was quite old before he finally sort of said, okay, I'm going to take and give her my name. Because, you know, it was difficult. Here she is, the daughter of one of the wealthiest men in the world. And at times he was, well, stingy is putting it mildly. And as I said, when they were young, when Lisa was young and her mother was young, they really had nothing. And so it sort of puts it in perspective, and it shows you another side of Steve Jobs. And as she says, he does change as he gets older. And of course, near the end of his life, he had such a terrible, tragic death with pancreatic cancer. But it's also, I think, a story of it comes down to a story of a young girl who's walking on eggshells, trying to fit into somewhere, find some solid place to put her foot down. Between her mother, her father, and all of the things that were going on around her. And I really admire Lisa's book. I think that you will enjoy it. And again, back to Peg Herring for a minute. You know, it's just when you need to laugh, there are some cozy mysteries out there that just really grab you. But I think you will really enjoy Peg Herring. And it's a real easy name to remember, Herring. And so you should get her books. I wanted to also, going back to Bill Larson, who's going to be here on Thursday. I've been talking to a lot of people about different intellectual property problems that they are encountering. And part of it comes from really the kind of mail that you get, email that authors are getting, offering them all sorts of services and all sorts of schemes and all sorts of plans for making, turning their book into a movie. And I just want to, again, advise all of you, please don't do it. I mentioned before, I had two people who got involved in one of these scams. And now I just heard the other day from a third person who luckily came to me before they signed anything. But please do not send your book to anyone ever over the internet until you have a signed contract. So don't, and that's signed with your own lawyer. You need your own lawyer. You cannot trust anybody on the internet to say that our lawyer has done an agreement, and it's very official, and it's just a great agreement, so just sign it. Please do not do that. This is absolutely something I can tell you will not work. And if you have a question, just write me at patsy.radio@gmail.com, and I will give your question to Bill Larson, and he will be here on Thursday, and we will talk about things like that. Also, I have several authors coming up in the next, well, in July. I'm going to have, again, three literary agents. And we're going to talk again about the process, not just of how to write a query letter, which is, you know, something that we, all of you are always asking me about, but it's also how to do the proper research, because so many of the agents I am talking to, they get 10 to 20 submissions a day. So, you know, in a week, they might have as many as 100 submissions. And 80% of them are probably misdirected. They're saying they're getting submissions for books that they absolutely would not ever read. If they're not into sci-fi, they're not going to read a sci-fi submission. If they're not into cozy mysteries, they're not going to read a cozy mystery submission. So if you haven't done your research, from the minute they get that query letter, you are already in, you know, you're in the trash. They just trash it. So you never get beyond perhaps the first paragraph. So if you don't do the research and really think about what you're saying when you're doing a query letter, it's not going to work. But everything, I had a great day today. I really enjoyed talking to my guest today. Remember what I always say, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And if you're really, really lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a movie or a streaming video or a television series. You never know. But you won't know unless you actually start writing. And a page a day? Well, it adds up, and in no time you're going to have your first book, and you're going to be ready to query an agent and get a book deal. And I'll tell you next week about two big seven-figure book deals that just came to light, and it will make you think, oh, wow, I better start writing one page a day at least. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. He's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Bye-bye now.